the more effective that whatever solution we come up with will actually work. And it's been a controversial issue, you know, and it did get out of hand, and that we're now gaining some control over it. But the fact is that at the basis of all this are a class of people, prostitutes, who have not really been treated fairly. I don't think this that prostitution is an issue of consenting adults. I think it's white slavery. I think it is a type of servitude that, that the Constitution and the Congress have banned many, many years ago. So I think that we need to do something about this issue on a scale that we haven't done before. And this is where I think Commissioner Leonard played such an important part in terms of the early stages of how we address this problem and how we secure the funding for it. So thank you, Randy, for doing that. It was just so important. And obviously, folks like Mike Krebs and the members of East Precinct have just done a tremendous job, and they get what we're talking about, that they get this isn't about enforcement only, about locking them up and throwing the key away. This is about solving a problem. I can tell you, as a former police chief in Portland, if we don't do something about it like this, it's going to be in other areas, because we know we can push crime around, but we also know that if you really want to do something about crime, go to the source and deal with the source. And in this case, it's how do we effectively support prostitutes on leaving prostitution? And quite frankly, I don't view it quite as nicely about the Johns. That's one of the areas where I would like to lock them up and throw the key away. But we can't do that. But definitely, we've got to have our male population understand what is happening here and what their responsibility is. So thank you, Commander Krebs. Thank you, community. I look forward to the day when this is no longer an issue in Portland, Oregon, because we treat it in such a way that we deal with the issues and not the symptoms. So I'm very, very happy today to vote aye. Thank you all for being here. We're going to move to the regular agenda. Please read the first item.
Item 1706, amend the business license law to accelerate the timing of the first year adjustment credit to one tax year, clarify special industry apportionment rules, and clarify the effective date of the change to an after-the-fact tax.
In August, the City Council approved changing the business license fee to an after-the-fact tax. As a result of the change, over 31,000 businesses were scheduled to receive a credit paid over a five-year period. Fortunately, the City Council recognized that it was an opportunity to make a difference with the current business climate, to make sure that we do what we can to help our business community, particularly our small businesses. I asked the Office of Management and Finance if it was possible to issue a full credit this year rather than spreading it over 5 years. To their credit, OMF reviewed it, the accelerated option and its impact on the general fund, and found that in doing it in 1 year, it could be revenue neutral. The amounts vary from business to business, but in the spring, a total of $7.8 million will be returned to local businesses here in Portland. And I'm very proud of this council for taking this action and making these funds available at once. I think it will provide not a total relief, but some relief to our business community, and I think it's a wonderful action on the part of the council. So, folks, please proceed.
Mayor and Council, I'm Sue Klobertanz, Director of the Revenue Bureau, and I have Scott Carter, the Audit Supervisor, with me here today. Terry Williams would have loved to have been here today, but she's broadening her tax expertise at the Tax Practitioners Institute. So she's not with us today. You can tell Scott's the tax expert because he doesn't bring any notes. beyond that, Mayor, you basically said everything I was going to say. So let me just quickly reiterate that this is the next step in the process. We came to you in January of 07, and the council was very specific and told us to go back and look for changes in the business license law that would encourage the growth of small businesses, reduce tax burden, inequities, better tie city services provided to tax received and preserve the financial health of the city. We came to you in March with increases in the gross receipts exemption and the owner's comp allowance. Then again in August with the going to the after the fact tax. And this code that you have in front of you also, in addition to accelerating the credits to, and at last count, Mayor, it's to 50,000 businesses.
Wow.
So as we work on that, but also this code in item 8, if you note, directs the Revenue Bureau very specifically continuing to work on the analysis of the impact of a tiered minimum tax structure to offset increases in the owner's compensation. So we have that on our work plan. We're continuing to work on that. We wanted to include that in the ordinance so that you know that we know that's the next step. So the change to the after-the-fact tax was a major step toward fairness and simplicity. We believe this is the next one, and we look forward to coming back again probably in mid-2009 with the next piece. So let us stop there, and you can ask questions. And
any questions from the commissioners? It's a good thing you folks were so well prepared. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there folks signed up to testify on this issue?
We have two people signed up. We have John Torino and Kathleen Lansing.
Please come forward.
Want to go first or shall I?
Please state your name when you speak, and you each have 3 minutes.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, commissioners. My name is John Torino. I'm the executive director for the Alliance of Portland Neighborhood Business Associations, the APNBA for short, and I'm speaking on behalf of that organization this morning. The APNBA would like to go on record as enthusiastically supporting the City Council's decision to accelerate the rebates of the business license tax deposits from the previously approved 20% per year over a 5-year period to this full rebate in the spring of 2009. We think providing some fairly immediate cash to the financially strapped businesses in Portland who are trying to survive this current severe recessionary situation is indeed an excellent next step in the city's broader plan to provide economic stimulus mechanisms to help our business owners weather these tough times. As Mayor Potter said when he announced this action at the APNBA's holiday social just last Friday at the Laurelhurst Club, the amounts vary, but in total, $7.8 million is a pretty nice chunk of change. We're also pleased that this change looks like it'll be revenue neutral to the city, as it also faces tight budget restrictions. And we'd hope, in fact, that eliminating the need to carry the refunds payable for another 4 years will actually reduce the workload there at OMF. A lot less to keep track of. We again think the change that was made in August by putting words into action reflects favorably on the city's desire to have its attitude being viewed as more business friendly, and that accelerating this payout of the first year adjustment credit, which will provide much needed economic stimulus, lends further credence to the city's position of being business friendly. While we do, as I said, enthusiastically support this action, I would be remiss if I failed to remind the council that we're already on record as supporting the continued implementation of the city's resolution to increase the owner's compensation deduction to $125,000. And working with you, and I'm very pleased to amend my prepared remarks in light of the previous testimony, that you're obviously continuing to work on that, and we very much appreciate it. Thank you for providing me with this opportunity to testify before you. We thank you for your continued support of the APNBA, the 35-plus business district associations that we support, and the tens of thousands of businesses in Portland that comprise their membership. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Lansing with Lansing Linoleum Company. My family's business has been on Foster Road for 60 years. And I'm just here today to thank Mayor Potter and the council for speeding up our refunds in the spring. It's a lot of pleasure for us to see something positive coming out of the City Council that we could all agree on. Great idea, and thank you very much. I also want to note that I am a past president of the Foster Area Business Association that is a member of the APNBA, and thank you so much.
Thank you. And Kathy, thank you for talking with me when I came out to the Foster folks and talked with them. It was very informative to hear firsthand what was going on, and you certainly were very eloquent in your recitation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's all.
Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is a non-emergency.
This is a non-emergency. I apologize.
Take it back.
We've got one vote in the refrigerator.
That's right.
Okay. So did anybody want to make any comments? It'll go to a non-emergency and move to a second reading next week.
John, are you going to be here next week?
Be great.
I'd just like to say good work, Mayor Potter. Yeah. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, folks. Please read item 1707.
Authorize intergovernmental agreement with Portland State University to carry out the Communities of Color Research Project.
I'm Steve Dotterer from the Bureau of Planning, and I don't have a prepared presentation. I was just here to answer questions if there were any on this
item. You described the project very briefly.
Oh, okay. The purpose of the project is, it's assistance to us in the Portland plan. It's the tie. Minority communities are currently described by census statistics, and those are kind of rigid and don't reflect what's actually happening in the community today, and they're not the way the communities describe themselves. And this project is a project for PSU to work with the community, those various minority community groups, to come up with descriptions that are as inclusive as they would like to be in terms of the description, so that then we can work with that as we're going forward with the Portland plan. It potentially has some impact as we evaluate, for instance, our affordable housing programs or programs like that and who is served, that if we use a census definition of those various groups, that produces one balance of who's getting the programs. If we're using the community's definitions, we may get a different balance of how the programs are distributed. So that's the way it may actually play out in terms of specific programs in the future.
I think on top of that, the 2010 census will be the first time that they have allowed the respondents to self-identify,
mm-hmm.
and that will also, I think, reinforce what PSU and you folks will be doing. I think in the end, it will provide the city more tools to make better decisions with. So, thank you, Steve. Is there anyone signed up to testify? Any questions?
I just have one question, Mayor. And the attachment B on the project budget, it seems to indicate that there are two different contracts we're authorizing, one with PSU and one with NEA. Is that correct?
We're authorizing a contract with PSU, and they have a subcontract with NEA to do some work as part of that. Is that?
Okay.
Other questions? Thanks. Did I ask if there was someone signed up to testify on this?
No one signed up.
Okay. Is there anyone here who wishes to testify to this specific issue? Thank you. It's an emergency. Call a vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1708.
Further define the emergency management system of the city as managed by the Portland Office of Emergency Management.
Staff?
Mayor, Council, I'm Patty Reuter, Portland Office of Emergency Management, Planning Manager. We, in preparing for the update of our basic emergency operations plan, are updating city code. And we're updating city code because, for one reason, Congress has passed Public Law 109-295, and Oregon Legislature has adopted ORS 401039 prohibiting seizure of firearms. And in our code, it states that we can't, in our city code, says that under declaration of disaster, we can seize firearms. And so we've taken that out of the language so that it, let's see if I can see what it says. To the extent allowed by law, prohibit the sale, carrying, or possession of explosives of any kind or weapons of any kind other than firearms on public streets or public places. City code and the basic plan combined give the authority for the mayor to act in areas where the mayor would not normally have those powers. We've also just changed basic grammatical errors. We've added the Bureau of Emergency Communications to our Disaster Policy Council, which is our key group of representatives during disaster that would be giving the mayor direction. So those are the main changes.
So can I just, did I understand that the old language allowed the mayor under certain declared emergencies to take firearms, and under the new language that is removed? And is that because of legal reasons, or what is that accurate?
It's prohibit the sale, carrying, or possession. It doesn't say anything about about taking. It just says prohibit the sale.
What's the distinction between the old and the new language? I guess I should.
The old language says that the mayor could say you couldn't carry guns. And in the new, it says that that's okay. But all other explosive devices you can't carry.
So why is the change made?
Because of the state. Congress has passed the public law. And so we, in turn, make sure that we're in alignment with public law.
But Mayor Adams will still be able to set the price of food, won't he?
Yes. Yes,
I've got some food items I'd like you to do right away.
Why are we all getting a little nervous up here?
Yeah. me included.
Could I raise another issue? The Disaster Policy Council that's established, I assume that if the mayor is incapacitated or otherwise cannot serve, does it just go down the line to the next designated official?
It goes to the president of the council, and then it goes to the council member with the lowest number. And then it goes down the council, and then it goes to... So you have to remember what number you are.
What does that mean, the lowest number?
What your commissioner
two,
number?
Three. Each
what?
Position
number
has a number.
So Amanda would be number one. So I, that probably doesn't mean a whole lot to the public in terms of understanding the chain of command. I just wanted to offer a suggestion, not to amend this today, but since we rotate the president of the council every 6 months.
Yes.
But since we are talking about an awesome responsibility to be the designated number two in the event the mayor is incapacitated for any reason.
Yes.
I would think we might want to consider just having a more permanent rotation where someone serves for maybe a year, so you don't have a circumstance of every 6 months a new commissioner having to sort of get up to speed. And that may or may not be something the rest of the council is interested in, but I'm not sure it makes sense that we would rotate every 6 months a person who would be the backup in the you know, unlikely event that the mayor is incapacitated.
The only reason is to spread the wealth of experience and education of being part of the Disaster Policy Council meetings and to have it on the forefront of job responsibility. That would be the only benefit of changing it every 6 months. But it is important that each council member understands the gravity of the situation, that they could be in charge if there was something to happen to any of the other members of council. So we like to keep the education process up to date. So that's why we would change. But it is up to you, of course, if you would wish us to change it to a standard, a different way of identifying the succession. We're more than amicable.
Well, as long as Al Haig doesn't get elected to city council, I'm less concerned about who's the number two. But just food for thought. I think after getting the last briefing on emergency disaster preparedness and the fact that there's this big one that's coming down in the next 50 years or whatever, or whatever's predicted, I think we might want to have more continuity and experience. But I understand the countervailing argument about rotating, although, anyway, so something to think about.
I really appreciate your input, and I hope that the council mayor take it under consideration. Any new thought?
Other questions? Thank you.
Thanks.
Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here in the room who wishes to testify to this specific issue? It's a non-emergency, moves to a second reading. Please read item 1709.
Establish excuse time, e-time, pilot program for employees of the Bureau of Development Services for a period to end September 30, 2009.
Mayor, Commissioners, Anna Canowitt, Bureau of Human Resources, Paul Scarlett, Director of Bureau of Development Services, is here with me today for this ordinance. Before we get into the actual ordinance, you do have an amended Exhibit A in your packet, which was a result of discussions that I had with the president of the City of Portland Professional Employees Association on this program. And because it is an amended ordinance, then we do need a motion, an amended exhibit, need a motion to amend the ordinance to change the exhibit.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
Thank you. The ordinance before you establishes as a pilot program something called excuse time or e-time. It actually existed back in the 90s and was kind of a surprise to me because when the Bureau first came to me to discuss implementing it, I said I'd never heard of it and found out actually I was the city attorney who signed off on the program in the 90s. Oh, well.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting old. I understood the commissioner's joke. At any rate, under the current Human Resources Administrative Rules, an employee is not allowed to take time off without pay if they have accrued leave on the books that they could use to cover that absence. In addition, if an employee does take unpaid time, unless it's some form of protected leave, such as family medical leave, that unpaid time can adversely impact the amount the city pays for health benefits and can also adversely impact their seniority. So the point of this program is really to address, as it states in the ordinance, the ongoing economic issues facing the Bureau, and is simply one tool that we're making available to development services to achieve some salary savings during this economic slowdown. We are recommending it as a pilot program that would go through September of 2009. To be able to evaluate the effectiveness, the salary savings, impact on operations, and if it is effective, then we would come back to council at that point if we want to continue the program no longer as a pilot and also can roll it out to other bureaus at that time. So basically under the program, an employee can take time off without pay, without impacting their seniority, city benefits, accrued leave banks in increments of 5 work days or more. It is the eligibility requirements right now are non-represented or represented employees who unions agree to it. And I did have a very productive conversation with the president of COPIA, and that's, as I said, why we amended the exhibit. They wanted to be sure that it was absolutely crystal clear that an employee's seniority would not be impacted by their taking time off without pay. Because you see with the program, a week would not impact somebody, but if they took up to the maximum amount under our normal rules, that time wouldn't count to their total seniority. So we were able to work that out, and COPIA is very supportive of the program, as are its members, in moving this forward. So at this point, it would be offered to both non-represented employees and COPIA employees in the Bureau.
For
DC2?
DC2, I have not yet had a discussion with DC2 on the program. So if they agree, then it would be offered to DC2 program employees as well.
Would it be helpful if I gave you some background? Anna alluded to it, but let me expand a little bit. The Bureau of Development Services is completely dependent upon fees from building permits to support our activities. There has been a precipitous drop in applications for land use reviews and building permits, which has been mirrored in a drop in revenue. Paul and I have been meeting, crunching numbers with my staff, with Denise Klein in the back, and we're rapidly drawing some very unpleasant conclusions on about how we're going to have to address the drop in revenue. One of the things I asked Paul to do is be as creative as he could in thinking about other strategies beyond simply laying people off that might help us reduce the personnel expense that we're having at the Bureau. This is one of those strategies. I'm meeting with the unions next week to give them the financial data, that the latest financial data that Paul and I and Denise continue to work on, to try to we have to develop a broader strategy than just this, but I want to include them in that discussion. So this is a piece that we hope will be taken advantage of by employees. We have a number of employees who request time off. We're thinking there might even be more if it doesn't harm their standing at the Bureau, and it would help us avoid making some very unpleasant decisions here rather soon.
How did you come up with 80 days? Where'd that number? I'm just curious. 80. It's 80 days in a calendar year?
Yes. We really looked at the prior policy to look at the amount of time, and it was basically taken from that, and also in discussions with the Bureau in terms of the amount of time a person should be back to be productive, because the Bureau had some concerns about if, you know, you were gone for a week and came back for 2 days and were gone for another week. The 2 days the person's back is not really very productive time. So that was really part of that discussion. And my understanding, too, and Paul, you can chime in, is that this was something that was discussed in your LMC meetings as well and was supported there. So,
yes, for sure. Good morning, Mayor and Council members. Paul Scarlett, BDS. The cost measures that are being evaluated and really are necessary, this is one of the tools. And by way of extension, I do want to express appreciation to HR, particularly Anna Kanwit and Linda Lewis, who worked with us and has brought this ordinance forward. We have heard from a number of employees that they would be more than willing to take to utilize this option, and along with other cost-saving measures that we've been reviewing and implementing, such as reduction in overtime and some other measures in place, we are faced with, as Commissioner Leonard said, some major slowdown in the workload and the revenues, of course, correspondingly. And I do believe we have, as Anna alluded to, a pretty collaborative process. We're not bringing this to you just as managers. We've talked with the union members. We've talked with employees. There's strong support for it. Other cost-saving measures that are being looked at right now are embraced by the employees, by BDS, and we, by extension, discuss with our industry partners and customers as well.
So, Anna, just to put the human face on this, because Commissioner Leonard, I think I understand it now much more clearly, but if I am an employee working in Paul's shop and I chose to work a four-day work week rather than a five-day work week and wanted to cut back, this would allow me to continue my benefits while working a reduced number of hours?
Not exactly. This ordinance won't do that.
But we are working on something.
Right. We're looking at that as well. I mean, right now, an employee can cut back to 72 hours in a pay period. Mm-hmm. So, in essence, that's 1 day off every other week or a half a day off every week.
And
in that case, there's no reduction. But we're looking at changing that as well, looking at whether that should be lowered to less hours.
So, in effect, it's a tool that would allow the Bureau to maintain its professional staff while also dealing with the decline in revenues by being more flexible in how we assign the number of hours and other things to keep
well, and
to
hopefully a combination of these approaches amounts to enough savings that we don't have to make more dramatic decisions to save money.
Right. Okay. Right.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a balancing act, of course.
Are there questions from the commissioners? Is there anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is there anyone here who wishes to testify this specific issue? It's an emergency. Call a vote.
Fish.
Well, after getting the most recent, you know, briefing on our overall budget, we're obviously in a time where we're looking at significant potential cuts and services that may be impacted. So I very much appreciate that you are ahead of the curve in thinking about ways where we can maintain our complement of professional staff while also adjusting to the new economic reality. And I have a feeling that this and other innovative ideas that you're working with will probably migrate to some of the other bureaus. So as the housing commissioner, I appreciate, you know, learning about this tool because we have obviously have the same concerns. I'm pleased to vote aye.
Leonard?
Well, it is distressing to me the discussions Paul and I have had lately, as I know it is very distressing to him. And we will look for every opportunity to find ways to reduce our costs, particularly in collaboration with the employees there. We have an outstanding group of people that work at the Bureau of Development Services, and we hear it daily, Paul and I both do. And what we're attempting to do is figure out a way to make sure we minimize this economic impact on their lives. And working together and with the help of Anna, as Paul pointed out, I'm hoping we can get to that place, but it's going to be tough. But thank you both for being so creative and coming up with this alternative. We have others we'll be coming with later, hopefully, to get to a place where we end up not having to lay anybody off.
Right.
Saltzman.
Well, this does sound like a creative approach under some challenging circumstances we're here, so I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Potter.
And I also concur with the other commissioners also that it's a very humane way to address this issue. And I agree with Commissioner Fish that this will probably be looked at by other bureaus, too, as a means by which to reduce the impact of the slowdown in our economy. So thank you, folks, and I vote aye.
Thanks.
Please read 1710.
Vacate a portion of Southeast 9th Street and Southeast 38th Avenue, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Staff?
Hey, good morning. Linda Berth, PDOT. The street vacation request before you today is a portion of some streets in the southeast corner of Reed College campus. They are both unimproved. Planning Commission and City Engineer both recommend approval with conditions, one of which will be a pedestrian connection from Woodstock through the campus, an improved pedestrian bicycle connection. So it's a good benefit that we obtain.
Questions?
Good.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
Is there anybody signed up to testify on this issue? Okay. It's a non-emergency, moves to a second reading. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please read it. It's been moved to a second reading, and please read item 1712. Excuse
1711.
Me. 1711.
Assess benefited properties for street improvements in the North Winchell Street Local Improvement District.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Andrew Abbey, Local Improvement District Administrator. Mm-hmm. This project is 14 blocks away as the crow flies from the Northeast Winchell Street LID that you'll be voting on after this agenda item is complete. We did not have any remonstrances against LID formation when Council approved the LID 2 years ago, and we also did not receive any objection to final assessment by the deadline of 5 p.m. last Wednesday. The final assessment rate, which is on an abutting linear footage basis, is 10% below the amount estimated at LID formation. Those savings are being passed on to the property owners. What I just passed out to you is an email I got from one of the property owners. She just wanted me to forward her appreciation to council for approving the project, and she's attached some before and after photos to show you the change in the neighborhood. So I'd be happy to answer any questions from council.
Questions from the commissioners.
Looks like dramatic improvements. Great.
Thank you. Is anyone signed up to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
Is anyone here who wishes to testify to this specific issue? It's a non-emergency and moves to a second reading. Please read item 712.
Assess benefited properties for street improvements in the Northeast Winchell Street Local Improvement District.
It's a second reading. Call to vote.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read item 1713.
Update Public Utilities Code policies and practices.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. The utility license fee, or ULF as we refer to it often, contributes substantially to the city's general fund. It has been in place since the 1940s and has not been substantively revised since 1990. The current code contains significantly outdated language and lacks orderly procedures for administration, collections, financial review, and appeal. The primary objective here is to update the utility license fee to match the structure of our business license fee. In the future, this council may want to discuss, talk about the scope of the utility license fee, but first we need to clean up the code and make it consistent with modern practices. Council adoption of these revisions will not create a greater or lesser class of payers than exist under the current utility license fee. Thus, these are housekeeping amendments and are revenue neutral to the city. After more than a year of work and consultation with industry, the cable office is now bringing forward these amendments, and we have David Olson, the director of the office, and Ben Walters, the city's attorney, to explain these amendments in a little more detail.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman and council members. I'm David Olson of your Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management. Your utility license fee is a tax, like your business license fee. It is a pillar of the general fund, part of your three-legged stool that supports your ability to pay for police and firefighters and parks and all the things the general fund pays for. As such, this is the overall franchise fees to the city are in the neighborhood of $60 million a year, but 80% of that $50 million or so a year of your general fund is absolutely dependent on this section of code, this utility license fee in your code. Very, very important. The scope of the application of this tax hasn't been changed since 1990, which I might add is before any current members of this council were on the council. However, it's important to say that both the utility license fee and your business license code, as you know from earlier agenda item, are housed in Title VII of the code. The business license code, as you've already heard, has quite a large number of payers. I thought 5,000. Did I hear 50,000? I mean, there are quite a large number of payers under your business license code. And your business license code has been updated a number of times, as it was on your agenda earlier today. Your utility license code, I mentioned that the scope of it hasn't changed since 1990. The procedures under which it's administered have not changed since its formulation under the Harry Truman administration. And therefore, there is a significant lack of updatedness in this extremely important pillar of your general fund. Your current ULF code refers to telegraph and steam utilities. It has no real audit procedures or records retention procedures. There's no requirement that the payers retain records or provision for inspecting those records to verify payments of this very important revenue source. There's no collection process set forth. It retains inaccurate definitions left over from the 1940s, doesn't accurately refer to the bureau that administers the section of code, doesn't even refer to the proper bank, the city's bank. It doesn't have time limits in it for record retention and for audits. And there's no modern appeals procedure for assessments under it, commensurate with what you do in business licenses. The list goes on, Mayor and Commissioners. The results of this lack of recency, lack of update to it, is that the city has ended up not being really having sufficient tools in our toolkit to administer and defend it when it is contested. And many council members may recall that, indeed, this has been contested. In 2001, when one of our major payers, Quest, challenged it and withheld payment under it, and the city prevailed in that court proceeding. And currently in an audit, we have an audit underway that's been underway for 6 years. I believe we'll settle it with Quest, hopefully within the next several months. But again, if you had more, if you had sufficient tools in your toolkit providing for an orderly procedure, providing for records retention, the process simply goes better. So these are some, just a few examples of the need to have this code provision on which so many of your revenues depend updated. This council has discussed, as many of you recall, the scope of the code, expanding or limiting the scope of the code in recent years, 2004 under Commissioner Leonard, on 2006, Mayor, under you. There's not a consensus yet on those issues, but the housekeeping issues, these items that are missing, have remained regardless of whether the council wanted to address the scope of this. And so in 2007, with Commissioner Saltzman, we were very grateful and happy that we received the charge to clean up the house, fix the basement, caulk the tiles, in other words, update the code and put in modern state-of-the-art provisions for this code section on which so much of your revenues depend. And that's what was our charge from Commissioner Saltzman. That's what we've spent the last year doing. This process over the last year has involved multiple meetings with the payers of the utility license fee. Lots of information and comments collected. It's fair to say not everybody loves a tax, but on the other hand, we did receive comments relevant to the housekeeping charge we had and other comments more relevant to scope, but scope was not within our charge. We considered and incorporated the comments related to the housekeeping items wherever we could. We listened very carefully to these. We have the comments on scope. We still have them, and at a future time, the council may want to return to that. But again, the scope of this is not in front of you, only the administrative aspects of it. And again, as Commissioner Saltzman said, the financial impact of this code section is not going to change on any payer under this code, regardless of these housekeeping amendments. These housekeeping amendments do not change the financial impact of this code section on any payer. What it does is clean house administratively and correct things. Our last round of comments from industry was constructive in many ways. We responded individually to all these letters and provided time for industry to get back to us. The result of all this is these housekeeping amendments are in front of you. They are important. They are long overdue. This utility license fee structure functions on a calendar year basis, so our hope is to have this in place when the new calendar year begins, which is why we're in front of you at this time. Among the overdue tasks, as have been mentioned, we now, under these amendments, will track on the utility license code the same structure as your business license code. We comply with, we'll comply with formatting. We update the administration of this so as to be consistent with your business license program. We set the rate of interest to be consistent with the business license program. We get rid of steam and telegraph utilities that no longer function in town. We are consistent in our reference to revenues. We establish timeframes for auditing, collections, record retentions. These are not in there previously. We have a modern practice of appeals under this. So appeals don't come directly to you. They are handled the way they're handled elsewhere. They go through a code hearings process so that they can be processed in an orderly manner. And we have specific criteria and processes for when or if any penalties are assessed. There's now a process for that, an orderly process, appeals, rulemakings, all of these things that simply make it a better administrative mechanism and put it in the 21st century where it belongs to be consistent with all of your processes, your other processes for these significant items for the city. Included also, among other things, is a confidentiality provision for the industry payers. That was not there before either. So that when we do have to audit or verify financial records, they'll have an expectation of confidentiality to the extent we can provide that. So all of these are administrative improvements to this code, housekeeping in accordance with our charge from Commissioner Saltzman.
Thanks. Ben, did you want to read through?
Almost.
Oh, okay.
I'm almost there. All of these tasks, as I say, are long overdue. The need is self-evident. The unanimity... it's not just your administrative bureau speaking about this. There's unanimity among your entire your bureaus on this. If you hadn't had a chance to see it, I want to make sure you have in front of you the memo from your chief administrative officer, Ken Rust, and your city attorney, Linda Ming, regarding the importance of these amendments and the importance of this long overdue housekeeping. So those were sent to you, but I do want you to have those in front of you. So, in any event, we collectively and unanimously urge you to move this forward. It's long overdue. We want to thank Commissioner Saltzman and his staff, Brendan Finn and Amy True. We want to thank the City Attorney's Office, Ben Walters, and all of those folks who have worked with us on this. We want to thank staff in your offices for sitting down with us and getting inside the details of this, which we appreciate. And indeed, a thanks to industry for constructive comments that have come in from them. So, in conclusion, there's no change in definitions or scope, no change in number of payers. It keeps your fiscal house in order. At some future time, you may want to remodel, expand, or otherwise the house, but in the meantime, fix the leaky basement, caulk the tiles, and make sure your fiscal house is very much in order for this very important component of this city's general fund and that supports all of the important services this council provides. That's with me is Ben Walters, who's worked with us on this, and we are very happy to answer any questions you may have.
I had two questions. One is that we've had some communications from Quest, and their question is, will they see an increase in the fees as a result of these specific changes?
Mayor and council members, these housekeeping amendments will not change the fiscal impact of this utility license fee code on any payer. Is that the best way to say it, Ben?
Mayor Potter, Ben Walters, there's no changes proposed to the definitions section, which identifies what revenues are subject to the utility license fee, and there's no changes to the percentage of revenues that is the basis for calculating the utility license fee. So there's no anticipated changes along those lines. There might be some impacts on the audit side because, as David alluded to, we've been attempting for approximately 6 years to undertake an audit with Quest, and issues regarding confidentiality arose. We've tried to address those in this, and the ability of the city to demand and obtain records was an issue in that proceeding, and it was contributed significantly to its drawn-out nature. As David suggested, we're hoping to draw that to a conclusion shortly, but we would not want to see the city hamstrung if we were to undertake an audit like this of that nature again in the future. So that's one of the reasons for coming forward with these proposed changes.
The other group that contacted us was Comcast, and their question was, would these changes allow you folks to begin collection of the utility license fee from them?
Mayor and council members, our position is that Comcast, in terms of its telephone services, is already liable for this utility license fee on the telephone services they offer in Portland. We will bring an enforcement action to you for your consideration, regardless of the outcome of these housekeeping amendments, because these amendments do not change that one way or the other. And we'll bring an enforcement action for your consideration, and you could cast these amendments away. We will still bring before you an enforcement action for your consideration. So these amendments do not change that issue with respect to Comcast, and will come before you in due course to have that discussion. I can say, as I think I pointed out, for housekeeping, when you have an action such as that, the city's better positioned if its processes are improved, both not just for the city's sake, but also for the payer's sake, including Comcast's sake, when should you adopt these amendments, because you have more transparent procedures.
David, I'm sorry.
I thought you might be wanted to comment, Ben.
If I could. To repeat my earlier statement, we're not making any changes to the definitions of what revenues are subject, and we're not making any changes to the definitions of what the percentage rates applicable are to those subject revenues. We have a difference of opinion with Comcast. We've had contacts with them regarding their present subjectibility of revenues earned by them within the city to the ULF. There's a disagreement between us. There continues to be a disagreement between us. These amendments are not intended to address that disagreement.
Okay. Thank you.
David, we had a lively discussion recently about cell phone towers at council.
I heard a rumor, Commissioner.
And I'm interested. There's some technical language in the materials that you gave us referring to pole attachment revenue and joint pole use revenue. Could you just describe that generally?
Yes, Commissioner, and Ben can add to this. Some of the comments from industry, and these are primarily the electric utility payers, asked for a specific exemption for joint pole use revenue from this code. There is no such exemption in the current code, but our administrative practice has been to allow those to be excluded. These amendments do not add that additional exemption, because that's beyond our charge, you see, because we're not expanding or contracting what we currently have. So there is no exemption for that category of revenue in these housekeeping amendments. Should we have added it, it would be an additional exemption, and it would thus change the scope of your existing code. Having said that, we've indicated to the electric payers, our administrative practice has been to accept that exclusion. We've accepted it for many years. There is no proposal to change that, but to write it into code would change the scope. It's beyond our charge.
And maybe for my benefit or anyone else who's watching this, can you just define what pole attachment revenue refers to?
The category of revenue is my understanding, Ben, could probably also be helpful here. The above-ground utilities, the air utilities, rent pole space to each other and phone and electric and sometimes share poles. They charge each other for that. There's a rental cost depending on who owns the particular pole. So there's this pool of pole attachment money that tends to move around, like interagency agreements where they offset or charge each other as each participant on a pole uses that money. And the question is, well, since it's a pool of money, the policy question is, should it be included or not? But we've just gone with the code we have. But what's referred to here, as I understand it, is this cross-rental, like interagency among the pole users for attachments to existing poles. Ben, anything to add to that?
No.
And I'm going to ask you just another question, which I know is very basic, but it may inform some future council action beyond housekeeping. And that is, currently, the utility license fee is applied to which telecom carriers and which carriers are not covered by the fee?
This utility license fee, of course, has been in place for many, many years since World War II and before AT&T was broken up and before many other companies came in. To the extent any telecom carrier has a franchise with us, a franchise for street use. Remember, this is a tax, not street use. That's offset. But the major telecommunications companies are Quest. To the extent Comcast has communication services, it would apply to them. And those are the major payers under this on which we rely on the ULF to apply.
So just by extension, it currently does not apply, for example, to our wireless
That is correct.
Providers.
It does not.
It does not apply. And prior to your joining the council, there was a significant discussion and debate about extending it to wireless providers. And that has, for political reasons, political decisions, that has not included as part of this proposal.
Again, all of those kinds of issues at a future time the council may return to. We welcome that future discussion, but that's not in front of you in terms of these amendments.
Other questions?
Thanks, folks.
Thank you. Did you have a sign-up sheet?
We did. One person signed up, Judy Pepler.
Good morning, Mayor Potter, members of the council. I'm Judy Pepler. I represent Quest. I really wanted to testify to ask the question you asked on whether it was going to change any of the fees because our lawyers and accountants were not clear given the language. So now that I've heard that it does not indeed change any of the fee obligations for my company, we're much more comfortable with the changes that have been made here. We do, however, urge you to address the broader policy question that this license fee applies to some companies that we compete with in the marketplace, but not all companies that we compete with. And we really believe it now would be the time to do a telecom ordinance specific to the entire industry that is competitively neutral and non-discriminatory. Thank you.
Meaning to extend the tax you pay to wireless companies?
Or take the tax off of the other company. So.
As I said, meaning to extend it to other companies.
if that's the policy decision, yes.
Commissioner Leonard, I have to say I had the same reaction you did. This is now the second time that a major business entity or organization in our community has come before council and asked us to extend a tax.
Well, and hearing yesterday from I think it was Jim's story. I don't know where I read it. That we have an unprecedented amount of businesses who agree Portland's a business friendly city. I want to do everything I can to accommodate you.
on the record, I did not advocate for more tax. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you, Judy.
Is that it?
That's all who signed up.
Is there anybody here who wishes to testify to this specific issue? It's a non-emergency. Moves to a second reading.
Mayor Potter, I've agreed to speak to a group at noon. I wonder if we could do the emergency ordinance first in case I have to leave.
Please, hearing no objection, please read item 1716.
Authorize acquisition of approximately 4 acres of property in the Gateway Regional Center Urban Renewal District in accordance with an intergovernmental agreement authorized by Ordinance Number 182361.
Commissioner Salzman.
Thank you, Mayor. Council earlier approved a parks PDC negotiation for about 4 acres of open space in the Gateway District, primarily for park purposes. An unresolved matter was the maximum purchase price authorized by council, which had been set at $4.6 million. Per the council's request, a new appraisal has been obtained by a different appraiser, and with the new appraisal, supports a not-to-exceed purchase price of $4.3 million. Purchase and sale agreement is in place, and that is the price that I'm urging adoption in this ordinance as drafted. We have representatives from Parks and PDC if there's any further questions.
Any questions from the commissioners? Thank you, folks. Is anybody signed up to testify on this matter?
Yeah, one person, Arlene Kimura.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Arlene Kimura, and I live in the east side of Portland, and I'm here in support.